Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Earl Johnston from Hypatia Industries.
We did not go in the order. Oh, gosh. That's my fault.
Sorry. My bad. This is what happens when I show up late.
Go ahead, Lauren.
I'm Lauren Dorman from A Color Bright.
And I'm Michael Rogg from Top Shelf Craft.
And I'm Paulo Elias from IDEO.
Yeah, so Paulo, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
What we want to talk about today is some weird thing called Jamstack. So I guess if you were out chasing a storm in the Midwest, like hunting down tornadoes, and someone was with you and they said, what the heck is this Jamstack thing? Like, what would you tell them in just one or two sentences?
Well, it's basically using JavaScript on the front end to communicate with APIs to pull in data and content to display it.
So, I mean, I'm already using JavaScript on the front end. How is that different than what I'm doing already, right? I mean, there must be something that differentiates Jamstack from, you know, just using jQuery and using that on the front end and a CMS on the back end, right?
Yeah, and in a way it does. You can use jQuery to pull in external data from external APIs fairly easily and show it. Usually, Jamstack sort of implies that you're either building single page apps and rendering the content, the JavaScript and front end content in a render step build process, and then it's served to the client. And then if content changes via the API, it's lit up, brought in by JavaScript when a client visits the site.
So JAM stands for JavaScript APIs and markup.
Yes.
And so, as I see it, it's not so much like a tech stack of like a specific tech stack in the way that we usually talk about tech stacks, but it's more like a philosophical stack where the object of it is to move most of the work of like presenting the application to the client, off the server to the client.
Yes. Yeah, that's one way to do it. But with server rendering, and we can go into that a little bit later, the entire sort of application does not have to be completely rendered by the client, at least at first load.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that I think most people are used to what is referred to as a LAMP stack, right? Which is where you've got Linux, Apache,
MySQL.
Thank Postgres. You, Earl. MySQL, I'm seizing up here in PHP, right? And then there's also a LEMP stack, which is Linux, Nginx, and this is where they screw up, right, with the acronyms. So Nginx got all cute by starting their name with NG, and then you can't make an LNMP stack, like you can't pronounce it. So you call it a LEMP stack, which is the same as a LAMP stack, but you're swapping out Apache for Nginx. And I think that's something that a lot of people are familiar with, whether it's Ruby or Python or PHP. There's something on the back end that renders the templates, and either, you know, it either renders them raw, or there's a templating language like Twig or Blade or something like that. And then if JavaScript is used, it's just kind of, you know, sprinkled here and there on the front end to make things work. So how is Jamstack fundamentally different from that?
Fundamentally, I kind of think of it as a little stack on top of a sort of a LAMP stack or LEMP stack or however you want to call it.
But in theory, with Jamstack stuff, like you may not even have a server somewhere, right?
Well, you still need to serve at least static assets. So,
yeah, but you can just use like a CDN and just dump everything up there. You
know? CDN, even like the built-in Node Express server or whatever.
Or AWS Lambda or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, now you can get into all the sort of fun serverless functions and all that sort of stuff. But there's you still have to serve something, and it's usually static files and that sort of thing.
There's always somewhere where the app lives, but I think like an important point is like comparing LAMP to JAM is sort of a red herring, because like your Jam app doesn't care where it lives. So yeah. It could be living on, you know, a server that runs Linux and Nginx and PHP and MySQL, but the fact that it lives there has nothing to do with the philosophy of the app being based on JavaScript right. API.
So how do I know? How do I know if I'm using a Jam? So how do I know if I'm using a Jamstack? Then is there like a little badge that they give out? Is there a
yes.
certificate or something?
Yes, you submit your site for certification and you receive back a tiny little jar of Jam.
That actually would be super cute.
I would be totally into that. Although I would be into some sort of certification for
yeah.
serving Jamstacks responsibly.
But you know what I mean? Like at what point?
Yeah. So
I'm doing a Jamstack?
What if we took it like one letter at a time and talked about like the core principles of JavaScript and API and markup and like what it means for them to fit into this philosophy?
Well, no, I'll tell you what, Michael, why don't we ask Paulo? Because, Paulo, you used to do stuff a very traditional kind of lamp stack-ish way with Expression Engine and Craft, right?
Back then WordPress and whatever it was before.
Or whatever it was. And then you made a transition to doing Jamstack stuff. So at what point did you feel that you had made that transition? Like what changed in how you did things?
Yeah, so it's an interesting sort of... There's a long story and a short story, but the short story is
we got an hour.
Yeah. Well, we can get into it. But so I was actually contracting with IDEO to sort of keep their Expression Engine site propped up. Mm-hmm. There was going to be a story on like Good Morning America. So I was brought in to sort of help them.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. So I was brought in to sort of help them scale their Expression Engine site. Mm-hmm. And, you know, scaling an Expression Engine site, or, you know, even any sort of server rendered site can sometimes be kind of a hairy process. You've got to throw a lot of hardware at it. You've got to,
for the duration of the show, static cache it.
Static cache it and that sort of thing. Sometimes that can be easy. Sometimes it's not, you know, the old sort of way of LAMP was working. And I think their server was still on PHP 5.6. So it was not a fun sort of process. So during that whole project, they were also in IDEO was internally building out their new version of their website. So, they were prototyping, this React app that they were building out of their Munich office. And one thing sort of led to another. And at the end of the Expression Engine project, the team in Munich was handing off the React app to the internal marketing team. The global marketing team at IDEO, and they realized, oh, hey, we need someone to come in and sort of help maintain this application. And they, since I had an established relationship with them and they apparently seemed to like working with me, I was asked if I'd throw my hat in the ring for their open position as a technical lead on their global marketing team. And I got the job and they handed me this React app. And at the time there was a few other folks working on the project still. So I was able to sort of get onboarded and get into this whole new way of building apps and trying to figure out, well, how's Node working on the back end to render this React app and how's React working to serve everything. And, you know, within a couple weeks, I was like, wow, this is actually a pretty fun way to build websites, web applications. It was sort of like a new toy, shiny new toy. We were able to statically render the site, serve it on Fastly, and you could throw as much traffic at it as you wanted. And you know, we used those testing services that throws tons of traffic at the site, and it scaled super well. It was amazing. And then comparing that to what I was used to scaling traditional sort of LAMP sites, I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And then actually getting in and building the components and just working with it turned out to be really fun. And ever since then, I've sort of slowly gotten into it more. And now I kind of, you know, I try to like reach for JavaScript and Node and React for even new little projects I'm coming up with or working with the team internally. And it's kind of an interesting switch from, like, you know, before this this job, I was kind of like, I was Earl,
right?
Like from the last episode you guys were talking about. This is probably dating myself, but, you know, I was, you know, learning responsible web design and development from, you know, Dan Cederholm and Cameron Mall and those guys in the early mid 2000s. Jeremy Keith, he had him on.
Right.
And at that time, JavaScript was evil. It was the devil. It was not, you know, and I don't want to say it wasn't necessary, but it was like, you know, everyone's like, just try to build your stuff without JavaScript, or minimally use MooTools or jQuery or Prototype, or, you know.
And it was also sort of a toy at that point, right? To some extent, right?
Yeah, because no one had really thought of it as a language to build robust, rich applications.
Because, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't there yet, mm-hmm. you know?
No.
And I've made any number of mistakes in my life, but I can think of a few very big monumental ones where I thought something was silly and was never going anywhere. So one of them was back in the day when I used to do game and iOS development and stuff. I had in my office two guys that were working on this little project that they were using to make a game for us. And they were trying to show me this thing. And all I was interested in was the actual game that they were making. I'm like, this thing that you're building in Mono, I mean, it looks really neat, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. Well, that ended up being Unity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Which is absolutely everywhere. And I mean, these guys are supremely successful now. So that was number one. And number two was when I first saw Node.js come out. I'm like, they're putting JavaScript on the server? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is never going to go anywhere. Right. So, I mean, that was obviously another complete monumental mental mistake on my part. And I think what it was that I just completely misjudged the value of inertia, in that when you have that many people that are interested in something, good things are going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But enough about my mistakes. Let's circle back to what Michael was talking about and take the three letters of the jam one by one, right? So in order for something to be considered Jamstack, I mean, I guess the number one thing is that you're going to use some kind of a front-end JavaScript framework, right? You're going to use React or Vue, or, you know, maybe you're even using Svelte or some more vanilla thing, but that's that's a part of it, right?
It's definitely a part of it. You can do it vanilla JavaScript in vanilla JavaScript, but have fun with that.
It's
doable, but it's not as fun as being able to dive into one of these sort of performance, you know, front end frameworks that allows you to sort of just hit the ground running and get your view layer jamming on the Jamstack.
And I guess the second letter is A for APIs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big picture there is that you're calling an abstracted API of some kind. Like, so for instance, whereas, you know, maybe you used to do MySQL queries or something like that in PHP or Ruby or whatever. Now you're calling GraphQL, which is kind of a layer in between this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And any number of other things that you might normally do server side, like maybe image processing or image resizing, instead of doing that on the server with Imagic or GD or whatever, you're going to be using Imagix or Cloudinary or something like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have I butchered it yet?
No. You're
it's good.
You're on the right track.
Yeah.
And then the markup is essentially that you've got a, you know, for the same reasons why we're using templates. When we're talking about Craft or with Twig templates or Blade with PHP, we don't want to be writing stuff without having some kind of a templating language on the front end that makes a lot of this stuff easier. And then we can use components and we can get all sorts of fun stuff with React and all that kind of good stuff. Now, for you, Paulo, for you to do a Jamstack project, like the core of that, it sounds like, is it starts with React, right?
Well, for me, I like React. I I tend to use it more because it's what I'm more comfortable with. And I also, I've used Vue in the past. I think it's a great little framework, and I'm not trying to start a holy war or a flame war or anything like that. But one thing with Vue is it's more opinionated than React, and React in a way is more vanilla JavaScript with life cycles and renders, render props and that sort of thing on top of that.
Wow, so, I actually thought the complete opposite.
Yeah. Oh, really?
That's the first time I've ever heard anybody call Vue opinionated, actually. And I don't necessarily disagree, but that is not a common opinion like in the Vue v React conversation.
Yeah, and again, I don't have enough invested in either one of these to care. Right? So this is not a holy war argument by any stretch of the imagination. I definitely do have more experience in Vue than in React, but when I was approaching both and trying to learn both, it felt to me more like React was more opinionated from the point of view that if I wanted to do stuff, I needed to do it the React way. And I needed to, there was a whole lot more to learn in terms of getting up to speed with it. Whereas with Vue, you could start by just taking, just sticking a piece of it and replace jQuery with it. Or, you know, then if you needed a store, you could add that on. Then if you need a router, you could add that on. Then if you wanted to go full SPA, you can do that. And it just seemed more, and maybe I'm confusing opinionated versus taking the chunks of technology.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like the learning curve was it was much steeper with React. In other words, in terms of before you can use it and get up to speed, there's a whole lot of mentality and mindset that you have to get into. But you're saying that it's the opposite?
Maybe for me, it was the opposite. I remember when I was getting into Vue, it was, you know, everything is structured nicely in terms of how you write your Vue components and that sort of thing. And with React, it was more like mostly vanilla JavaScript with some React parts mixed in. Now, the one misconception is that you can't use React to replace jQuery. Like Vue, you can still do that.
Right.
And just target either specific elements on the page and render those sort of as React components with their own state and that sort of thing. But again, this could be just familiarity with how much I've actually used both.
Right.
Because when I built a small little client project with and used Vue with Craft, and it was a little bit more cumbersome for me to get up and running with it than with React. So,
yeah, I think that they're very similar. Like, we can put them in a bucket, which is they manage a virtual DOM and give you some like composable reactive components that get rendered in this virtual DOM based on some like state.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the ideas behind React, Vue, and those types of frameworks, I think Svelte, but you know, Preact, Inferno, those types of things is sort of the reactive data driven aspects of the framework that part of the reason my talk at .dot all is to sort of enlighten folks that these are the things that we should be learning now and understanding, because it's a whole new paradigm from hunting the DOM, changing this, you know, writing 80 lines of jQuery to open up some sort of widget on the page where it takes 3 lines of React or Vue.
Totally. And Evan Yu actually tweeted something out. He's like, look, you know, Vue, React, Preact, all of these things, they've got way more in common than they have different.
Exactly.
And I think to some extent, like, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you buy into this kind of better way of, I don't think it's just a better way of rendering things. It's a better way of structuring things, you know? Well,
the luxury that we have now, and when we say the word reactive, that's really just a fancy word for some component in your app, some UI thing is reacting to changes in data. And it's the difference between imperative programming, which means I have to tell that component what to do. Like, that was sort of the prevailing mindset of jQuery was everything was very imperative. I select a thing and I tell it what to do. Versus now, with these modern data binding libraries, my code becomes declarative, which means I tell the thing what it is and what data it's based on, and then that thing becomes a self-sufficient unit, and it watches the data that it knows it's based on. Right. And if that data changes, I don't have to tell that component to update itself. It just does because it knows what data it's watching. And so it's a much like cleaner mental model, and much less stringy paradigm for writing code, because each unit in your program is so much more self-contained, and it's responsible for doing its own thing, and you don't have to like keep in your mind juggling the management of all of these things. You just define them to be self-sufficient, and then you give them their data, and they just do what they're supposed to do.
Well, and I think the secret thing, or the thing that happens, maybe people don't even realize they're doing it, but by working this way, you are forced to define the problem ahead of time, right? Because you are basically structuring the data around which everything is going to work. And therefore you're forced to kind of plan things out. Whereas with jQuery or vanilla or whatever, you just like start writing shit and it just happens. And there's no rhyme or reason or structure to it, but we got Earl here.
Yep.
And I'm gonna set Earl up, right? Because I want to, and Paulo, I'm real curious to hear your take on this, as well as Lauren and anyone else who's been working with this stuff. So we're taking the template rendering that we used to do server side, which is a beefy server that presumably can render this stuff nice and quickly, and then we're delivering it over the wire to people, right? That's the kind of traditional model, and now what we're doing is we're saying, now, you know what? The client is going to render all of this stuff. So we're moving all of that hard work. And instead of doing it once, every single person that visits our site then has to go through this work. And their devices, you know, especially if they're using a mobile device, they're not extremely powerful. And they have to be, you know, relatively modern to be able to handle some of this stuff. Aren't we just kind of kicking the can down the road? I mean, we're accomplishing the same thing, but we're doing it in a different place. And then we realize, well, hey, if we do it this way, the performance and the experience, it actually kind of sucks. So you know what we're going to do? We're actually going to bring all this stuff back to the server where it was originally. We're going to render it on the server, and then we're going to deliver it statically. And aren't we just doing... Like, haven't we just recreated everything that we were doing already in JavaScript? Paulo, I want your take on that. And then Earl, I want you to jump in and talk about it from your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can say we have sort of recreated all that in JavaScript. What I would say, though, is, I don't know, from my experience building front ends of websites, for example, taking Craft and Twig, it's for me, it's much more, how's the best way to put this? It's not only more fun, but it's faster, and you can achieve much more interactivity without having to do all the DOM hunting and jQuery soup. I tend to get things done much quicker because I'm just dealing with sort of the reactive way of React, taking the data in and changing the UI as needed. I mean, the other thing to think about too is, while this way of working isn't for every project, sort of the way things are going is people are expecting more native-like rich applications.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's definitely ways to do that with Twig and rendering it that way. It's a lot. It's almost the same amount of work than, you know, setting up server-side rendering and going through React and then trying to figure out how to jQuery soup it with Twig, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you. I think web development is dead, and everyone really these days are
long
making
live web development.
Yeah, right. Exactly. are making, you know, small scale custom apps. But Earl, what's your perspective on all this stuff?
Well, okay. So first of all, this is, Jamstack is like brand, or this is all brand new to me. So I'm a little out of my depth here. But most of what I've heard from everyone is that this is all very developer centric. And these applications are for users. So Andrew, I feel like you hit the nail on the head before when you're talking about performance and forcing everything client side is fine if we're all using beefy machines. But for, you know, a lot of people, they're still using older machines or they have netbooks or they're getting hand-me-downs and things like that. That's a part of the user base. So I don't have any beef with this, the concept.
Oh, I wanted you to have a beef.
Well, no, I mean, I really, as long as the performance is there, like, right. Cause really, again, what everyone's saying is this is more fun for me. This makes more sense for my, you know, mental well-being. And I'm happy that's the case for everyone. But if your site is slow, you know, looking at you, the new Reddit redesign,
right?
Yeah.
Your site sucks and I don't care about you. Well, I don't care if it makes you happy. This site sucks. You
know, so, like, Earl, I think you made a really good point, and I'm going to try and distill it down. You tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
But it sounds like you said, all right, you know, this is great that you developers love this, you know, kind of way of working. But where's the benefit to the user? Mm-hmm. Right? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, Paulo, where's the benefit to the user? We love that you like working in React, but where is the benefit to the person that surfs to one of your fancy React sites?
Yeah. So this is where, earlier we were talking about getting certifications. I made a sort of joke about, well, I wish we had certifications for serving Jamstack apps responsibly. You can still achieve all of that doing it, building single page apps or sprinkling in JavaScript, you know, Vue or React throughout your server rendered pages. Especially with the tooling that's out here now and they're working on is, you know, you can still have super small downloads. You don't have to download the whole bundle at once. Accessibility is a big sort of push, at least in the React ecosystem. I'm not sure where it is in Vue, but you don't have to lose out on any accessibility benefits. At the end of the day, if you're server rendering things, you're serving statically rendered HTML and adding some JavaScript on top of it to render it after it loads as needed. So there's pros and cons for sure. But it's the performance hits aren't as scary as I think people realize or think, especially, you know, these days. Back when, you know, when I started at IDEO, I'm working with this, a German, his name is Stefan Seat. He's super smart. He actually, you know, he bent Webpack and built his own server-side rendering thing before it was really a thing in React. Like, this guy's a super smart dude.
Oh, wow.
And he's in Berlin at Leroy. He probably I don't know if you know him or not, if you run those circles. But anyways, probably if it wasn't for him, I might not be into this as much as I am, because he's been able to open my eyes with a ton of this.
It's always good to have a smart mentor,
yeah,
in a field you're trying to get into. Right?
Yeah, that's why when you call me smart on Twitter, I'm just like, eh, smart with me. But anyway, so
like I think performance like exists in lots of different dimensions. Mm-hmm. So like we're going to be doing some dynamic programming somewhere, right? Either it's in Twig or it's in something else, or it's in JavaScript. And the philosophy of JAM is that any dynamic programming that happens during the request response cycle is in JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And you can write really crappy, non-performant code in Twig, mm-hmm, that takes your server forever to render and the client is waiting on you. Or you can write really crappy code in JavaScript and the customer is waiting on you. Or you can write clean code in either of those places. And like vanilla JavaScript or these modern data binding frameworks, they are really fast. And spinning up UI from like source data is not a very intense thing to do. So if we're talking about you're using JavaScript to render some like WebGL particle animation, you know, of your intro to your website, like, fine, maybe you're being irresponsible and like someone on a weak device, like you should just let them not have to deal with that. But like in terms of where dynamic programming is happening, you're not going to see, I think, a big difference in like your customer's perception, whether you're doing that on the server or you're doing it in JavaScript. I don't think that's on the radar. If you are writing good code and you are optimizing things like for perceived performance, it's not going to be an issue. But I think that you get a lot of performance benefits in other areas, like, you know, instead of having to do dynamic programming stuff like processing for 1,000 customers at a time on your server, like you are serving up static markup that's like pre-built at deploy time. And so each client just has to do whatever dynamic programming stuff is specific to its instance. And so it scales much better. And I, as a customer, am not waiting on your server to figure out 50 other requests that came in before me. All of the processing that I need for my interaction with your app is happening on my device. And so I think that's where the performance benefit is. I think if we're talking about like how long does it take your server to parse an array through Twig into a list in HTML, or how long does it take JavaScript to parse an array into HTML, I don't think that the customer, like, that's not on their radar. They're not perceiving
that. All right, here's the thing, Michael. And I'm going to make a bold statement, okay? You can pick the language. You can pick any language under the sun. You can pick PHP, Python, Java, JavaScript, Go, anything. And I can make you a site that is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely.
Like you give me a language.
I make sites that are terrible all the time.
Right. So you give me a site and I can make it perform terribly, right? Sure. But I think the thing that Earl is kind of getting to is, oh, it's wonderful that we love this tooling, but what benefits do I see on the front end? And Earl, I think the way I would answer that is that a lot of websites these days are apps. Right. I mean, they're performing as web applications, mm-hmm. right? That is really what they're doing. And they're doing a ton of UI work. And then conceptually, we're taking data and if we're doing server side rendering, we're doing the manipulation once, and then we're sending the same thing out to all of these clients. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
But when we're working on app-lite things that are very different for every person that is interacting with them, then it starts to get untenable, because every single thing that you're serving to each separate person is going to be different on a server rendered basis. And that's the point where it makes sense to have each individual client, as Michael was saying, do the kind of dynamic stuff that is needed. So the benefit, I think, to users, Earl, is that you can actually develop something that is interactive and is app-ish, and will perform well without, as Adam said on our podcast last week, the choice really isn't between a regular website and a dynamic website with React or Vue. It's really, do I make a native app in Swift and then it's only on iOS? Mm-hmm. Or do I make something in React or Vue or whatever? And then everyone who has a web browser, in theory, can access it. However, none of this explains why Earl's big beef is that Reddit made this huge conversion from a very lightweight site to something that is just a resource pig by converting it over to a React app. Now, Earl, have you noticed any enhanced functionality out of it? Is it more interactive? You know, I mean, have you as a user seen any benefit from it?
No, I mean, they're serving way more ads.
There's the problem.
That was very clearly their motivation. The thing is too is that even looking at it on a browser that's running an ad block, an ad blocker is marginally better. But just the way that they have it set up with like like modals and like modal windows and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I just don't. And they did that so that every time someone clicks something, a new ad loads and, mm-hmm. and blah blah. You know what I mean? So but that's just such a bloated, shitty way to build an aggregate site. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm still sore from like the new Dig version that came out 15 years ago. That caused everyone to, I don't know if anybody remembers that, but there was a huge exodus from Dig like 15 years ago. You know what I mean? So I'm still like, you know, Earl, picking bones about that.
You're going to have, we're going to have to do some therapy with you. It sounds like you need to let go.
I need to talk to somebody for sure.
Well, wow. but I think the point is like, it's a bloated, shitty way to build a website that has probably very little to do with like the core stack and more to do with a bunch of ancillary stuff that's getting tacked onto it. And I don't think it's necessarily like, I don't think we should minimize the issue of developer preference, because we're always saying, you know, use the best tool for the job. Well, what is the job? The job is to provide a good experience to your customer. And so if that's your goal, then everything else boils down to what tools let you do that most effectively. And so like asking what benefit does the customer get from you using JavaScript is like asking what benefit does the customer get from you using PHP. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They don't care. They're looking for like the end experience. Right. And so why JavaScript? Like because like the no, because like I can serve ads no matter what stack is building my app. The point is like the jam stack, the philosophy is all the dynamic programming in the request response cycle is JavaScript. Why? Because we like JavaScript. If you don't like JavaScript, don't use jam, use PHP. If you can build a faster site in PHP, don't use jam, use PHP. Like it doesn't matter. The reason that we've chosen JavaScript for jam is because we prefer JavaScript, and so we're choosing to do our dynamic programming in JavaScript because we think that will like enable us.
The acronym wouldn't work otherwise. Right. But all right, so I guess I do have a quick, for my own edification.
Yeah.
All right, so you're talking about, you know, when you're talking about server rendered sites versus this JavaScript, Jamstack style stuff. The dynamic portions, things like, you know, user specific data, you know, things like that. What's the difference? Just again, because I don't understand. What's the difference between having a statically cached site, like something that's built with like Craft or something with escaped segments versus the Jamstack
site? So the big difference again is like if I have 10,000 people visiting my site at once, mm-hmm. the server is generating 10,000 unique pages. This one device is doing that, mm-hmm. right? Whereas with the Jamstack, the server is just sending the data and then each client is getting their tailored experience. But we've got this really smart guy, right. Paulo, yeah. on the show. I want to ask you. I mean, there must be some projects that you have worked on that it would be really difficult to do the kind of interactive UI that you're doing if you were not using something like this, right?
Yes and no. I mean, difficult, yes, because of the amount of DOM sniffing you'd have to write to get sort of the front end experience that we're looking for.
Right.
The other great thing about the Jamstack is, so IDEO has a culture of prototyping. We sort of come up with ideas. We try to build little MVPs and test them as fast as possible, iterate until, you know, you can get to the final product. Mm-hmm. The one thing I really like about this stack is that you can use something like Contentful or GraphCMS and quickly just get some data up into the cloud, use React on the front end. It can talk to React. A mobile app, it can talk to React Native. So you can quickly, without worrying about server resources, without worrying about spinning up your own servers, just get these little landing pages or microsites or iOS apps or internal applications that people are using. You can start, you can hit the ground running much quicker than it is if, you know, you're installing Craft or some PHP CMS. You don't have to, like, we are, you know, on our team at least, we're pretty strained for resources. And so not only am I a tech lead, but I'm also the DevOps guy to make sure everything's running.
Oh man, your company's in trouble.
Well, this is for the global marketing stuff. It's they have an IT department to do all that other stuff.
I'm just kidding.
But so I am sort of every time we come up with an idea and we want to build a new site, it's like, okay, are editors actually going to be going in there and editing stuff? You know, if so, okay. How often? How big is it? What's the data? You know, the content model, data needs, that sort of thing. Okay, then we'll spin up a site, but a craft site, and then, you know, who's going to maintain it? Well, I get to maintain it. So once you're sort of, as much as you can automate it, you know, once you have 2, 3, 4, 5 sites in your pipeline, then it starts like, okay, so where am I spending my time? Whereas right. with the Jamstack, you can sort of plug into sort of any API and service that you need to, and if the project's a success, then you can build it in, you know, craft or Ruby,
and you can swap it out.
Then you can sort of flesh it out. So, and also I just wanted to say another thing too. So before I came to IDEO, I was running my own little development studio. And so I had a whole different perspective on this. Like, why would anyone want to even attempt to do all those weird Node JavaScript stuff? This is totally dating me, but in the late 90s, I was working at a startup and they actually used this Netscape server, and they were actually using JavaScript on the server for a couple of their apps. So, I remember using that. I was like, holy, this is just not fun. So before coming into this project at IDEO and get this team and my role now, I was like, oh man, this is like a disaster waiting to happen and all that sort of fun stuff. So, it's a much cleaner, faster way to get ideas out there. And you're not sort of working on these long-term projects with a client that, you know, they know what they want, they know what they need. Now let's go build it with a traditional sort of way of doing things. So the way I've been working is this stack has completely streamlined the way you've been able to do things and streamlined the resources we need to keep things humming along.
Yeah. And I've done exactly what you're talking about where I have worked on an SPA-ish thing and we mocked out the data in Contentful. But there are a number of companies that I work with that they want to host their own API server.
Right.
Like they want the data to be somewhere, but it let us mock it up real quick. And then we actually ended up using Craft to actually serve up the data. But that let us just get something up and running, but we didn't have to do any kind of setup, any of that kind of stuff. But I've run into, you know, companies that said, oh, you know, Contentful is really nice, but we want to host this thing. We don't want to pay a service and have our data sitting out there. But it is kind of nice that the Jamstack way of doing things, it kind of lets you divorce these things and swap in the components as you need them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we should be clear that Jam is not like opposed to CMSs. But critically, the key detail is you're not using your CMS to do the dynamic programming and like serve up your templates. You're using your CMS more like, you know, to provide APIs. Mm-hmm. And so your JavaScript doesn't have to care where the data is coming from. And that's our next point is the APIs, but it's like, it doesn't matter. So it lets you sort of kick the can and defer the decision about where is this data housed and where is it coming from long past the point where you can like prototype things. And so if you want to spin up just like a flat data source, JSON in a file or something coming from Contentful or Firebase, like whatever, it doesn't care. And if you want to replace it later with something more robust with an actual author experience like Craft, okay, great. Because at no point was your CMS responsible for the dynamic programming concern that all lives in JavaScript.
So here's a perfect example for you, Earl. Mm-hmm. So, and we all have like these old expression engine sites or whatever, right? And they're a nightmare to maintain, and they're just in general just horrible to work with. Not necessarily just because of expression engine, but because they're old, right? Had that been done in a Jamstack-ish way, let's say Expression Engine was on the back end and you were using React on the front end, you could just migrate the data from Expression Engine to Craft, or whatever you wanted to use and swap them out. And because the front end is not intimately tied with the CMS that you're using, it would just work.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Lauren, I'm curious to hear your perspective on this, because I know you have done kind of more traditional LAMP-ish development and are now doing more with Jamstack stuff.
Yeah. I'm doing a lot of Jamstack stuff currently, like a lot of times using Contentful. I've tried Dado CMS. I've tried Firebase. I've used all of these. I've pretty much dipped my feet into pretty much almost all of the headless CMS, I would say. Like, I've tried them all, because we did go through like a pretty extensive like auditing period of like trying to figure out. I've checked this out as well. Nice. I haven't programmed with it, but I've definitely read the documentation. Yeah.
So what benefits do you see by working this way? Because you must see them. I know you're incredibly smart and talented. So whenever smart and talented people like you and Paulo, I'm going to keep saying it, are using something, I have to figure there's a reason. So what benefits are you seeing?
I think the flexibility working with the Jamstack, like the API bit is really, really nice. Again, like Michael was saying, being able to prototype something and use like a local, JSON file, to prototype something, and then, building out, you know, API endpoints or fetching from an endpoint, being able to like integrate that into something you've built pretty quickly is kind of nice.
So Earl is going to say, this is great. This is benefiting you. This is making you happy. but what are you doing? Like, how does this benefit your client? And how does this then benefit the visitors to your client site?
But that like, those are not unrelated concerns.
I'm not talking to you, Michael.
For the client, I would say there's definitely a speed thing there. You know, you could kind of get going up and going pretty quickly with the Jamstack, which I think is why a lot of people are kind of, you know, jumping onto the Jamstack now.
And I think you can do things in the Jamstack way that would just be super difficult to do otherwise. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like the interactivity and building web applications and things like this, like that interactivity, the hassle that you have to go through with other templating engines, like, you know, if you were using Twig or something like this, it's a bit more complex. So like having the option to use something like GraphQL and not worry about, you can still program in your favorite languages, Python or whatever it is that, or, you know, you can use Craft and then use GraphQL. Having that flexibility with the Jamstack is really nice, because you can integrate using any server side language that you want, you know. So it's really neat on that end. And for the users, it's not that it causes performance issues, because like chunk loading and things like this, if you're really you can totally build bad websites that perform very poorly
in any language.
If you're conscious in any language, of course. But if you're conscious and aware and you care about performance, there's definitely it can also be very performant and very quick and snappy to see and navigate through the web app or the website. Yeah,
I just spent a ton of time working on a Webpack config for plugins.
Oh, nice.
And the reason is I wanted to use Vue, and I wanted to use all this modern. I wanted to use Tailwind, Purge CSS, all this kind of fun stuff. So I managed to get it working, and I'm going to talk about this because I spent too long.
Super excited. Like to dig into this Webpack config that you did.
So I spent far too long working on it, but I did it for a reason. This is something that I can use on the front end as well, but it lets me do, so it's using Webpack 4, and I can do dynamic code splitting so that Webpack just profiles the code and it knows where to split stuff on. and I can do async bundle loading so that it doesn't load everything, right? It just loads it when it needs it. You know, maybe you click on a button and it doesn't load it until whatever you need, you know, a chart comes up or whatever. And then I also have it so it's building both a legacy JavaScript bundle and also a modern ES6 Plus bundle. And so it will load the right one depending on your browser, depending on whether it supports it or not, because it's ridiculous that, you know, if 80% of the people that are visiting your site are running Chrome or something else more modern, you know, why are we serving up this ES 2015
word
bundle with polyfills and all that nonsense in there?
Yeah, true.
I got all of that stuff working, and that was fun. And then the other fun part was getting this working inside of a plugin that works inside of a Yi2 asset bundle that's published on the front end with like a random hash and whatever. So, I mean, that's something that I spent a ton of time on, just getting it up and running. But you don't have to spend a ton of time. This was a very specific case. You can use something like Mix, or you can use the Vue CLI and React as tooling to do this kind of stuff too. Mm-hmm. And to get at Earl's point, like there are some incredibly smart people that are working in the JavaScript world. And there's a huge number of them. So the pace at which the tooling is progressing is just really impressive.
It's really rapid.
I think this is actually a great example, though, Andrew, because like what you are sort of doing is making your plugin features as they are presented in within Craft like more jammy.
Yes.
And we can geek out, and we will, because like I am so excited for this Webpack config about like how much fun this is from the developer point of view. But like the fact is, it's not just like for prototyping, like we were talking about earlier. This is a great example of a very practical way that this benefits your customers, because like the more portable your data is, the less monolithic your app is.
Right.
The faster you will iterate on it, the faster you will roll out new features, the fewer surfaces you have that are vulnerable to security issues. You know,
I hope
you're you know, like, and you're not tied to having this monolithic model of the dynamic processing is necessarily happening in the same place that the data lives. The data could live lots of different places, and it could be moving around, and your app could be consuming data from, you know, lots of different data sources, and
could be an iPhone app.
And so like, right. And so, you know, maybe Next is the native version of whatever it is that you're building. And so, you know, you're iterating on that faster. Like this stuff does benefit good developer experience, and good developer tooling does actually benefit your customers. Those are not competing interests.
You're right, because something that you said is very, very accurate. So I did all this work, but one of the reasons, and I also have it loading single file view components, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that it lets me do, Earl, is I can build stuff now, whether in the admin CP or on the front end, where I can just take components off the shelf and I can just plug them in. And it does let me create nicer user experiences quicker. And it lets me roll out features quicker. And, you know, I think that that is a really important thing. I mean, Paulo, have you found that it allows you to deliver, you know, features and revisions and that type of stuff quicker for you?
Much quicker. Sometimes the longest part is building out the API endpoint. Mm-hmm. So sort of a sidestep. The original IDEO.com that was first delivered was not delivered publicly, but internally was using Contentful as a backend.
Right.
And then the editors were kind of just like, this is not the most, you know, favorite sort of editing experience. Mm-hmm. And Contentful, for how great it is, Craft with that damn matrix field, they figured out that sort of secret sauce to really help push those art directed type pages and modularized content and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we built out using the Element API at the time on Craft 2, I got to build out a whole API that, you know, we switched over the React app to consume. And so imagine taking a Drupal site built out, almost completely done, and then say, oh, well, now we want to use Craft.
Right.
Have fun with that on the front end.
Good luck.
Since, you know, with React and sort of the reactive way, it sort of interfaces with the data and the UI changes to the, how the data is coming in and how the user is interacting with it. It was a matter of sort of changing endpoints, a few massaging of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a pretty seamless experience minus taking the, you know, few weeks to build out the API and,
right,
and that sort of thing.
Well, and that's a huge benefit though to your clients. And then ultimately mm-hmm. to the customers is that if you have this additional layer of abstraction, you are less kind of chained and tethered to whatever you've chosen for the back end, right?
Exactly. And even the front end too, because right now it's, you know, we're serving on Heroku, but tomorrow we could say, hey, let's put this on Netlify mm-hmm. and it can all be automated. And it's a much more portable way of building out sort of a website. But with the data, on the data side of things, if we want to deliver a React Native app tomorrow on Android and iOS, it can be done without a lot of fuss on the back end. So the back end sort of stays in one spot and it can be consumed in multiple places. So it's really nice. And also with what Andrew was talking about with his wrestling with Webpack, that the way you do bundle splitting and asset splitting and that sort of thing, that actually greatly increases the user experience on the front end. Right. Because if you're only loading assets that are needed for that view, that page, it is a world of difference in, you know, at least in my last Craft sort of server rendered project, you know, you're sort of loading your main JS file and then these plugin files. If you're using jQuery, you have to load that on almost every page.
Yep.
There are ways around it. But it's, unless you're careful, you can actually really impact time to first paint, the rendering of the JavaScript and that sort of thing.
The same people that complain about the bulk and the size of, you know, frameworks like React or Vue on the front end are the same people that are including, you know, like JavaScript, jQuery and a 800K charting library.
Or 10 of them.
Or 10 of them.
10 different things. Right. Yeah, it's nice. And then with,
all in separate files.
Yeah,
in separate exactly. files. And doing all of that by hand, like the code splitting that you get from this, some of this tooling, like you can do it by hand, but no one's going to do it because it's ridiculous to try and do on your own.
So. Yeah, and I would actually argue if you take Gatsby or ViewPress, hook it up to CraftQL with Craft mm-hmm. or Contentful Graph CMS, you could probably get something up and out the door a little bit quicker than you could if you did everything by hand Twig.
For
and
sure.
That sort of thing. So again, there's also experience too. If you're adept in Twig and that sort of thing, you can do it. But things are much more flexible when you can sort of deliver that user experience and build things in JavaScript in terms of, you know, filtering the data, fetching it, having that sort of already rendered and all that hard work from the server rendered already. And it's just a matter of just lighting up the page and downloading it.
Yeah. So. And it's, I know that this is a big future focus for the Pixel and Tonic guys they've realized that API servers are the way that things are going. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're doing a ton of work to make that happen as well, because, you know, this is a really important direction. Like if I were advising someone that was just getting into the business, I would tell them to invest in learning React or Vue or something like that, like 100%.
You know? I would right now, I tell people, if you want to get into web development, you know, understand HTML and CSS, because those skills are highly needed. Mm-hmm. We need people that really understand it. Because it's CSS alone, people don't realize that can kill performance on your site.
Absolutely.
So right now we've been dealing with, you know, we had a prototype that sort of got MVP'd and then it sort of launched, and we have all this legacy SaaS
Oh God.
that it's, you know, it, we were at one point serving, it almost got up to 1.5 megs of CSS.
Oh my God.
CSS.
Nice.
And that's,
and that, you know,
that's what my CSS, friend, that's what my friend Simon would say is append only CSS, where it's so big and scary that you don't want to change it. You just want to add to it. So he calls it append only CSS.
Yeah. You just it's more and more important selectors.
Right. So keep going.
It wasn't that bad. If you looked at the actual SAS, it wasn't, you know, we didn't use important. I don't think we use it anywhere, but
I'm going to search your code base. I don't believe you.
Yeah. Go ahead. And it's, I could be lying, but we're slowly transitioning the CSS in JavaScript. Right. So right now we're chipping away at that bundle size. And then later in the year, hopefully early next year,
hopefully you got critical CSS on there at least.
Well, everything's server rendered and the CSS and JS does sort of the critical CSS type stuff, but we don't have it specifically for above the fold content.
Yeah. You got to get
those. These are all things that as we improve our tooling, we're moving towards, because, you know, when we hopefully can upgrade to Craft 3 later in the year with GraphQL or CraftQL, I should say. And that's going to allow us to upgrade and modernize a ton of our stack. So we have to remember that this was started in early 2015. Okay. So
yeah, so it's been tooling going on
It's been going on for a while. And also there was also quite a few different people touching it during the initial build.
Yeah, that'll hurt.
With varying levels of experience, and, you know, I screw everything up as it is. So,
man, 2015, this sounds like one of Lauren's projects.
And that's when it started. And so it's slowly coming together with, you know, we finally have an Andrew storybook to start a front end component style guide type thing. And we're switching over to Emotion for the CSS and JS. Right. Which is another topic people seem to be afraid about, but
there's no end of topics that people are fearful of. But Michael, you'll get a kick out of this. So one of the things that I was considering adding into that Webpack config for the plugin stuff that I'm doing, it actually crossed my mind to add critical CSS in there, and I'm just nah, that's stupid. Like, how does that matter for the admin CP?
I mean, it's not stupid.
It is stupid,
but it's also diminishing returns.
No, right? It's dumb because it doesn't make any sense. Because there's no, it's still going to render block for everything else. You know what I mean? So there's no point. No, it's stupid.
Diminishing returns.
Just say it. Say, Andrew, that's stupid.
Andrew, you dummy. It's diminishing returns. No, it is, and it. But the reason it's stupid is because it doesn't help you. Like, maybe there might be a situation where it was going to make a difference and then it would not be stupid, but as presented by you, it's stupid.
Yeah, but I am adding it in anyway, though, because I'm abstracting this away enough that I can use the same exact config for front end as well as back end. You know, I just won't have anything in there. But getting back to what we were talking about before, Paulo, like, if I was advising anyone, I would tell them, you know, React or Vue. And you were going to say what you would advise someone who's just coming in now?
Understand JavaScript before you get into React or Vue. Especially with the way JavaScript has changed. Like, I was used to using, God, I don't even know if it was even ES5 and jQuery.
It was probably just JavaScript.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, let me Stack Overflow this little chunk and maybe I understand what's working.
Copy and then, paste, the tabs are all wrong.
And then I'm starting to get into this React code base and I was like, holy crap, what are these arrow functions?
Right.
So that was really fun trying to be onboarded to ES6 at the time.
As much as I love some of the changes in ES6 and beyond, some of them are dumb. Like the for of loop is just silly. Like, why can't we just have for in and have it work the way it does in PHP, where you can do, you know, for key comma value in whatever, you know, why do we need this for there?
Because it's, that's why JavaScript.
What's that?
Because it's JavaScript. Like, that's why. I mean,
yeah, but okay. But you can look at other languages and say, hey, you know, instead of adding a new operator, why not just make this work better? You know?
Well, yeah, but like, implement a map in JavaScript and then you can have your associative arrays, but you can't have them in JavaScript. I'm sorry. Like, Brendan said so, and that's the end.
But like, just use Lodash and you're fine.
Right. But this is actually a really good, like, JavaScript, like, okay, we're giving advice to somebody coming into web development right now, and we're like, mm-hmm. learn JavaScript, learn right. about Vue or React. Instead of what? Well, instead of something else like Twig that's handling dynamic mm-hmm. template rendering sorts of things, yep. That is specifically what we're like replacing in someone's like priority list of things to learn as a newbie dev. Yeah. And I think that sort of circles us back to the point of JavaScript as the foundation of the Jamstack at all, like which is the JavaScript tooling is just so much better now than it used to be. And JavaScript mm-hmm. as a language is so much more capable and so much more ubiquitous than it used to be. And mm-hmm. its expressions both on the web and in compiled situations and on servers like are just so multifaceted now that it really makes sense as like here is your first tool with which you will accomplish dynamic template rendering. It makes sense for that to be JavaScript right now in a way that it really hasn't in the past. And like, yep. I'm not giving up my precious Twig, which I love, and I'm not giving up,
you know, cuddle with it.
I do. I cuddle okay. Twig and I have such, I mean, it's a little kind of prickly and twig like, but we do have some good cuddles, me and Twig.
All right, no, well, let's not like, make it get weird.
We're not, you know, I'm not giving up my Twig, but I would certainly tell a junior right. dev coming onto my team, you know what, before you mess with PHP, before you mess with Twig, like, let's just teach you JavaScript and how to render things dynamically in JavaScript, because I think that as a thing that you learn, like a tool in your tool belt, your returns on that, in terms of what doors that opens for you and stuff that you can build,
absolutely,
is just so much wider. And I think that sort of circles us back to that's a pretty nice answer to why JavaScript as our dynamic, like center of dynamic programming, like that's why, because it opens
you're totally
a lot of doors.
Right. Like the fact that you're going to be able to reuse it. So I'm a huge fan of learning things that are portable and that are kind mm-hmm. of standards. All right. And it's one of the reasons why I love GraphQL, is that investing the time to learn that, I'm going to be able to use that on so many different projects. Whereas, you know, learning the Element API, I'm only ever going to use that in Craft. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, let's talk about Laravel. So Laravel has a language called Blade that, as far as I know, it's the only thing that uses it. Right. So if I were, talking to someone who's just starting out today, I'd tell them, don't learn Blade, like, you know, learn JavaScript and learn React or learn Vue or one of the other things. And the rest will kind of come, because we all only have so much mental bandwidth. Right. And think about, you know, for those of us who are around doing stuff in Expression Engine, think about how useful or not useful knowing the EE templating language is, right? Whereas if you...
I still wake up in cold sweats.
Yes.
Hey, PARSorder, you know...
No, don't, please. You're going to...
PTSD.
PTSD.
It was a rite of passage, man.
But like, PARSorder was a rite of passage. The point is, though, if you are learning, you know, Vue or React or just plain JavaScript or whatever, it's just such a broad range of things that you can use that to interact with, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just learned, you know, XCMS's custom templating language, it's really not, it's not going to help you that broadly, you know? But we've talked about what we would advise people who are new to web development, but probably none of those are listening to this podcast, okay? So what do we say to people that are, they're using Craft or they're using something else, and they do stuff in Twig? What do we say to them in terms of, you know, why would it be worth your while to invest your time in one of these frameworks, whether it's React or Vue or whatever? I mean, Paulo, what would you're essentially talking to Earl now, or yourself a few years ago, what would you tell him?
I kind of would tell him the same thing. Invest in sort of the technologies that are going to be around for the foreseeable future, but that are sort of ubiquitous across web, even mobile these days, cross-platform. So JavaScript, I know it's sort of this, I don't want to say scary beast, but before I was getting into it, it was just like, man, why do we need all this? It doesn't make sense.
Right.
It's so ubiquitous. You can, it's, you know, since we don't have Flash anymore, we're building rich rich applications with JavaScript.
Hey, buddy, we got Flash until 2020. Okay.
All right. That's good. side note, I was almost a certified Flash developer.
Oh my God. So how's that knowledge working for you?
Well, the ActionScript sort of helps with JavaScript, but yeah, and I would just say, you know, invest in JavaScript, but also invest in where you don't need to have sort of this sort of deep, low level knowledge of, or high level knowledge of how, you know, how to use React or how to use Vue, but understand the benefits of what, of sort of the reactive programming, sort of managing how it's state and data interacts with the UI, that sort of whole paradigm shift that we're moving towards. Cause that's going to be around for a while. The sort of hunt and pecking of the way jQuery, you need to find the DOM elements on the page, or even with vanilla JavaScript, when you want to target certain things on the page, that it still has its place for small things. But if you're presenting UIs to a person and you want it to be polished and usable, and if you want to, you know, reduce your headaches, I would, you know, understand Vue or React.
Or how about this? How about this? How about if we say something inflammatory?
Okay.
Like, if you want a job in 5 years, start learning it now.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a job in 2 years,
I don't think that's inflammatory.
It's just the way industries change, industries evolve. For developers that are kind of sticking to their guns and not at least getting it on their radar. I don't want to be sort of alarmist, but it's not going to be as easy to get to find a new job or impress clients with your portfolio if you're not evolving your sites or your applications to how things are moving forward. So
no, I 100% agree. Yeah. I 100%
agree. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that, in 5 years, you know, you're just going to need these skills, right? I mean, it's just the reality. And if you're insistent upon not learning these things, I think that you're going to end up you're going to be using tools to do stuff, right? You're going to use like Webflow or some kind of content builder type thing, to put pages together. And then it's going to be a skill set that lots of people can do, you know, and that means that you're going to be competing with a whole lot of people, to put together this stuff. So, I mean, I think it really does make sense to, embrace the Jamstack, you know?
And the advantage of really getting into it now, or at least getting it on your radar now, is you're still a little ahead of the curve, at least outside of San Francisco, New York, Berlin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're way ahead of the curve.
In some spheres online, like I go there and I'm like, oh my God, I'm 5 years behind. You know what I mean? Yeah. Holy crap.
Well, and like Jam specifically is just one expression of a JavaScript-centric web development philosophy, right? Like maybe there's reason for your app to be a little bit isomorphic. Like maybe you do want to do some dynamic stuff on the server, like, because maybe you have reasons to. So you're not, you know, so you're not going to be a purist to the Jam,
right?
You know, letters, but okay. I think as a theme, allowing yourself to separate the concerns of where data comes from and how it gets rendered into UI, like having those things be not monolithically layered on top of each other, I think just opens doors.
And this Jamstack thing is a critical part of what allowed a company like Facebook, regardless of what you think of them or whatever, that allowed them to become this huge company. Because without that type of technology, they just wouldn't have been able to build what they built, you know?
Sure.
And that's the kind of development work that lots and lots of people are going to be sought after to do, you know, to build these interactive experiences that are as widely accessible as possible, that you don't need to go through the hurdle of having them to download and install a native app, that they can just wander over to the site and do their thing and be able to use it, you know?
Well, I think, I mean, there's nothing inherently about, like, you can have a perfectly functional, interactive, lovely web app that is not a jam app, right?
Sure.
But the I think the bigger point is, as long as you are going to be doing so much JavaScript,
right,
like, make it nice, decoupled, testable, like iterable JavaScript, yeah, instead
don't be a masochist.
Of instead of building it really monolithically. And if you, Facebook's a great example, because like Facebook used to, I mean, they started off, you know, in PHP and server rendering everything. And if you go back and you you read like their dev blog from like the first inflection point was when they started really moving towards a client rendered app. And starting to decouple data sources from the front end app. And that was a big jolt in their productivity towards new features, right, and stuff. And then like more recently, sort of the second coming of that movement was when they, you know, they coined like Flux, and they started investing really heavily into this data binding world and,
yep,
and serving up just like really static pre-built markup and letting the app like really take care of itself in the client. Like that opened up, like you can see in their trajectory of rolling out new stuff and the way they talk about how they're working in their dev blog, like it made a huge bottom line difference to Facebook as an entity. And I think that's, you know, not all of us are working on that scale. I certainly am not, but like, it trickles down.
Right. And lest you think it's not important, I mean, lots and lots of companies are moving this direction. WordPress with Project Gutenberg, that's all rendered in React. Drupal, I believe now their admin CP is React. And a lot of these, and you know, they're not adopting this stuff just because they want to be cool. They're adopting this stuff because it makes what they want to do easier to do.
Yeah. And from a business standpoint,
because then it's not boutique, you know, whatever, right, I decided to do. It's something that you'll have a wider pool of people that can go from project to project, and it's going to make sense. It's not going to be this custom boutique thing, you know?
Sure. And from a business standpoint, for those of us like in the agency world, like, the reason that this philosophy made bottom line sense for Facebook also applies to the not Facebook sized client that you have. Like, like having a code base and a working mentality that is that much more iterable and that much more sane and that much more testable and that much more secure and that much more scalable. Like, these are benefits that you do not need to be Facebook in order to sell as value to your clients.
All right. Now, Earl, we got to do our test. Has anything that we have said or Paulo has said, how has it shaped your opinion of this whole thing?
Well, I mean, to be clear, I wasn't like against the Jamstack or anything in particular. I just had I had questions, and also I'm very...
You have a I hate Jamstack sticker on your car. What are you talking about, man?
Yeah, well, that's a custom thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, but
I have a sticker like that for literally everything.
All right.
Whatever.
Yeah. Go ahead, Earl.
No judgment.
Yes. So a couple of things that came up that didn't occur to me is the rapid prototyping makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That's nice. And sort of the benefits of iterating faster.
Oh yeah.
Makes sense. And so again, a lot of the questions I had and a lot of the things that I wanted to bring up are just because, I mean, I'm a developer, but I'm honestly more a user of the internet.
It's because you're bitter about
dig.
You're well, dig. I wasn't even going to go that far back. Okay.
Bitter about
you're,
dig.
You're bitter about Reddit. Is that what it is?
I mean, it's just, you know, and to go back to some of the main point of really all of this whole, you know, dev mode could really, our tagline could just be, you know, don't write bad code.
Sure.
Because again, like, you know, everyone said at one point, basically, it doesn't matter what you use, as long as if you're focused on the user and performance, that's the important thing. But as far as I like the idea of segmenting things into being more API centric, decoupling from, you know, Twig or Expression Engine, because I still have some legacy clients in Expression Engine and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me happy.
Right.
You're a good man.
That makes me feel good. The parse order stuff, that's still something I deal with.
I'm sorry, Earl.
No, that's okay. It's okay. You know,
No wonder you carry around such anger.
I do. Yeah, I'm just a sort of mad.
But lest we dig on EE too much, like, I have a Jam app that runs on EE.
Sure.
And
what
is EE as a perfectly lovely content management system,
right?
And it does not rely at all on EE's templating language,
right? And that and that's the benefit of the Jam stuff, right? Because then whatever the back end is, you just don't really care,
right? Yeah,
right.
So, and you know, we have to keep these sort of things in mind as we're building with this new tooling, right? And with all this amazing stuff that we have available to us today, it's easy to sort of get ahead of ourselves and say, "Meh, let's just send this 3 meg JavaScript bundle down to the user." Then, you know, they're all using iPhone 10s or whatever the latest Android device is, and they can render it fine. But you know, you still have to keep that skepticism and keep sort of that in mind as you're building the stuff out. Cause just, you know, as we've been hitting on this whole time, is you can write bad code regardless of the platform or the language. So it's good to have the skepticism.
And what I do with clients is I go in and I fire up Chrome on their actual machine, and I switch it over to 6x slowdown in CPU and a bad 3G. And I tell them, all right, load your site. You know, and that's how you show them how it's important, because that's how people in the real world are actually using their stuff. And I know Earl said that, Paulo, he said that your happiness doesn't matter, because Earl is, he's a crotchety old man. But are you happier doing this kind of development, like doing the Jamstack stuff? Like, does it make you happier as a developer that you can tap into this kind of array of tooling?
For me personally, I am much happier. I don't know if that's going to happen to everybody, but it's
on the record.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just digging into like the whole front end toolkit with, you know, building React components and componentizing everything, making everything modular, really, you know, getting to understand JavaScript for the first time,
right?
Even though I've been using it for 20 years.
Yeah.
But just sort of just understanding how to use it. It's so fun to sort of like just take the Legos out and throw them on the floor and get to play with them all
day.
It's really fun. And
that's awesome.
It might've been a timing thing for me, cause you know, I was using, the Twig and EE and whatever, WordPress. It didn't even have a templating language, but
it has bracket so PHP. Long,
yeah, the old PHP way of doing things. But anyway, it was sort of like a timing thing for me, where I was sort of getting, I don't want to say burned out, but it was like, oh man, not this again. And then this sort of like was a refreshing way of doing things. And now it's in my tool belt. So now when a new project comes up, I get to say, all right, is this going to be useful for this, or should we go back the old way of doing things? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, honestly, there are little brochureware marketing sites where regular Twig rendered PHP rendered sort of way of doing things is totally fine. Mm-hmm. No one's going to laugh at you. No one's going to make you feel bad for doing it. And that's also sort of another perspective I think people need to understand too, is you don't have to use the latest, greatest thing.
Agreed.
And feel bad about using what you've been always using. Having the ability to understand what's coming up and having it on your radar, and if you have side projects or your own personal projects you want to use the new stuff on,
But wait, wait, you just told me I wouldn't have a job in 2 years.
Well, I would get it on your radar okay. and start using it. Okay. Maybe not 2 years, but well, unless you want to afford rent in San Francisco. But it's yeah, it's a great way, great fun way of sort of rediscovering your sort of passion for building out this stuff.
And I, you know, even though Earl doesn't care about your happiness, I do think it's important because if you are enjoying the work that you're doing, I think you'll do a better job, you mm-hmm. know, because you don't dread, oh, you know, I got to work in this thing today.
Right.
You come in and you're excited. You're like, what am I going to slap together today? You know?
Right.
And I do think that that will cause you to, obviously you'll just be in a better mental space, but I think it causes you to do better work too. How about you, Lauren? I mean, have you found that since you have moved over to doing kind of more Jamstack stuff, are you enjoying the development experience more?
Yes, I do enjoy it a lot more, actually. At least personally, I feel like, yeah, getting off the ground is really, like, quickly is really nice. Yeah. So it makes me happy for sure.
And I've got two young sons, and occasionally one of them asks me, you know, hey, Dad, can you show me how to, you know, make a game or do this, that, the other thing? And I think about all of the garbage that I would have to set up before they'd be able to do anything. And then I'm just like, oh, you know what? We could just spin something up in Vue, and they could actually do something and see the reactivity and the interactivity and get something going right away. You know?
Yeah.
And I realized that, you know, teaching your kids programming may not be the goal you're looking for, but the same thing applies, right? If it's easy to get that up and running quickly, it's easy to get any of your projects up and running quickly. You know?
Exactly.
And we all have to make the decision in terms of, you know, what new technology am I going to invest my time in? I only have, you know, so much time in the day. I think it's a very safe bet that either Vue or React would be a very safe choice going forward. But I also think that at some point in your career, as you've worked with any number of languages, you're just like, you know, okay, it takes you a little while to learn the new language, but it's just another language, you know? And if you understand the methodologies behind this kind of modern reactivity way of doing things, when you switch from one to the other, you know, as long as you kind of understand the fundamentals of how it works, you can get up to speed on it. You know,
yeah.
At some point, all of these things are just like specific dialects.
I think one layer derivative of like your investment in JavaScript, which like it is, I think it's safe to say that should be everyone's next big investment as a developer is just get really good at JavaScript. But one layer derivative of that, you know, thinking about Jam as a philosophy, as a mentality, the more decoupled whatever that new toy is from the rest of your app, the safer it is, the faster it is, the more freedom you have to go try out some new tech and see if it fits as a tool or as a framework or as a whatever in some project or in your workflow. And you can do that very safely because it is nicely decoupled from the rest of everything else in your workflow. And that's like Jam implements this philosophy with JavaScript, but the theme I think is more important, which is that we're moving to this place of safety and freedom where we can go invest in new tools and play with new toys and have that actually cost us less and risk us less.
Yeah. I mean, let's say that in the future, what we're doing is we're writing stuff in Rust, right? And we're using WebAssembly to build our stuff. Well, if we've already defined off the APIs that this stuff goes through, it's going to be a lot less painful and a lot less coupled than what a lot of people are doing with, you know, just a CMS where it encompasses everything, right?
Yeah. Right. And I think like Jam sets us up not just like as a whole to be decoupled, like your Jam app is nicely decoupled from things around it, but it also sort of sets us up to decouple the JavaScript from the APIs, from the markup. And if we, you know, want to use a JA something else stack, like, okay. Or if we want to use a, you know, PAM stack. Right. Okay. Because like that's the direction.
No, Rust. Going. Get Rust in there. You can call it a RAM stack.
RAM stack. That sounds cool. That sounds.
I'm gonna ram my stack down your throat.
Okay.
Oh Christ!
And cue the lawsuit from Dodge.
We might need to edit that one out for my employer.
We might need to edit that out for my sanity.
Don't worry, I'm the one that said it. No one else is gonna.
That's actually our mantra for this show. It's not write good code. It's Andrew's fault. Andrew said that. I didn't say that.
That's fine. All right. So, I mean, this has been a fantastic discussion, and I really have enjoyed having you on, Paulo. Are there any kind of parting words you want to get in here before we actually let you get back to jamming?
Well, I just want people to just enjoy their work and make it fun for themselves. And if you're really into this stuff, it's just a really refreshing way of approaching stuff. I mean, just spinning up a little node server locally and using Mongo to just get some data in there and pull it out and using graph. And it's just, there's a lot of little fun things you can do with it. And it's fun to play with. So
I feel like, you know, maybe this sounds scary to people because there are all these terms that they've never heard of. But I mean, the one thing I'd say is that it's really not that bad, you know, start playing around with it. And I think that you'll enjoy it. And maybe one of these days, Earl, have we convinced you to give this stuff a shot?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's definitely something I'm going to tinker around with as soon as I can conjure some free time.
Yeah.
But the free time part is also, I mean, I'm very privileged to be able to have a job where I sort of get paid to do this. Mm-hmm. So I understand that it's not easy for everyone to sort of say, honey and the kids, I'm going to go spend 2 hours after work.
Yep.
You know, jamming on this stuff, but,
Ba-dum-psh.
Yeah,
but if you can, I'm glad we're not playing a drinking game with you.
We should have started.
So here, here's the thing that I think is I've mentioned it before, but a little trick is like, you know, if you're a freelancer or agency or whatever, use your own agency site or your own freelancer site as a place mm-hmm. where you play with this stuff and use it mm-hmm. as your playground to experiment around and nail it down to where you feel comfortable that you can use this for client sites. And you'll be enhancing your, let's be honest, like most freelancer or agency sites, like they put it up there and then they don't update it for years because, mm-hmm. you know, they're too busy doing other work. But spend a little time on improving that. And not only will you get a better site, but you've got a laboratory where you can mess around with this stuff. And I would encourage everyone to do that because I do think I agree with Paulo and everyone else here that it's an important future direction.
Right.
But that about wraps it up for another episode of the DevMode.fm podcast. Go ahead, Michael.
There is a Jamstack. There is a Jamstack website. I think it's jamstack.org, and it has very clear, concise explanations of things and links to a ton of really good resources. So don't be afraid of Jam. Go check it out.
And we will definitely put that in our show notes. But that wraps it up for another episode of the DevMode.fm podcast. To have every episode delivered to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to our RSS feed or subscribe via iTunes and Google Play. And if you like what we're doing, leave us a review. And you can follow us on Twitter at DevModeFM. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Just visit the DevMode.fm website and leave us a comment. For the DevMode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Earl Johnston.
I'm Lauren Dorman.
I'm Michael Rogg.
I'm Paulo Elias. Oops.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Perfect.
That is actually your
Thank
name.
You guys.
You got it.
All right.
Yep.
Pretty well,
yeah.
Except for the ending, that was my bad. Sorry. No.
Did anybody else hear the music like speed up and then slow down?
Turn the recording off now.
Yeah, I'm doing this Marvel thing where I keep some of the after talk at the end.
Oh, okay.
For like the 1% of people that actually are going to ever hear it.